bird.
It's a plane.
Well, hello, beautiful.
Listen up, casuals.
Cowabunga! You got a plan.
I'm afraid my protocols are being overridden.
Game over, man.
Listen up, casuals. We are back, and tonight I am still and will always be Rocco.
And this is Chris.
And tonight we are recording what we have dubbed this season, Listen Up Casuals Dark. We were talking, and really it was Chris who had noticed that all the characters we picked for this season, like just randomly, are what were you, like just violent ones you were saying?
Yeah, vigilantes, like the gray area.
Anti-heroes.
And the ones we had planned for the most part for the rest of the season also kind of fit that bill. So we made a switch, which is actually tonight's show.
Yes.
Because we had She-Hulk originally planned because we want to talk about it in relation to the show that came out oh so long ago now. Mm-hmm. But I think this is actually a much better character to do before that.
I absolutely agree with
who is it?
It's Elektra. Oh. It's Elektra, my queen Elektra. Those of you that know me and have known me for a while, my favorite superhero of all time is Daredevil, and you just can't have Daredevil without Elektra. And that is, I'm sorry, but season 2 of Daredevil on Netflix in my mind was the best one. But that's not why we're here tonight. We're here to talk about...
Why would you apologize for that? I mean,
it's more like a sorry, not sorry.
You should be... Anybody should be sorry if they didn't like it or didn't watch it. Like
fans of Iron Fist.
I love Iron Fist, but not that show.
Ugh. Oh, yeah. I know. That show was so boring. But we are here with Master Assassin. And
Greek
now...
Goddess.
Go, Greek Goddess, that's for sure. And...
not the dress.
Just Lady Daredevil now with her new persona, and we got a lot to talk about when it comes to Elektra. But before we get there, everybody's favorite part, sometimes my favorite part of the show, Chris, what are you reading right now?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked, because I'm actually on some new stuff. I wrapped up all those Tom King books I was reading, and I jumped over to reading some of the Blue Beetle run from the 80s, the Len Wein one. One of my favorite characters is Ted Kord, Blue Beetle. So I wanted to go back and read these titles, and it's fun to read from that time period.
Oh yeah.
And then I started the Curse of, or the White Knight series, the Sean mm-hmm. Murphy, like White Knight universe books, which is just, it's so great. It's a great different telling of Batman and the Joker. And the first, like the, it's funny because our friend Casey and I were reading it at the same time, and mm-hmm. I was rereading it, and I was like, I think you really like this because he's a Fast and Furious fan. Cause there's some very crazy, like, parallels to those movies in this book, like the funny stuff.
Okay,
the use of vehicles and things like that. I don't want to spoil it. Have you ever read it?
I have not read it. No, I don't know why, because I
know you're not a Fast and Furious fan.
I am not,
but the it's such an obvious like ripoff of it and an homage to it at the same time.
I like that. I like the thought of that. Maybe I'll pick up a trade for like the beginning and see how I like it.
That's what I did. I collect, like I said, I don't read my comics, but I'll buy the trades of stuff I really want to read. Or now I have the app, which is really helpful because I don't have to buy anything besides the app, and save a lot of money on just reading runs and stuff. That's the biggest thing, is like comics are expensive. So I'm glad that the app exists, because like with the premium DC one, I can read them a month later. I can keep up on books that I don't want to just pay for. So I started also reading The Adventures of Superman John Kent.
Nice.
Which is the like his Tom Taylor's mini series where it's Ultraman is murdering Kal-El's on all these different Earths. Mm-hmm. So John Kent has to go and stop him.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty cool. Anything Tom Taylor, I'm really excited because his Titan series starts soon.
Yeah, he's a great writer. He is a fantastic writer. He's helming Nightwing. Yeah. Did one of my favorite miniseries, Dark Ages.
Yeah.
I mean, he's doing Knights of Steel.
Yeah.
Dark Knights of Steel, sorry. Which I mean, the guy, everything he's touching is gold. So
yeah. Exactly. We have these really great writers right now in all of comicdom. And I think that's something to like really get excited about because it just keeps it very fresh. Mm-hmm. We're introducing brand new concepts into how comics written and deep storylines and even more now. So it is a new age of comic books. And I think that it's going to be very beneficial for the future of fans.
I agree. And I think one thing that we don't applaud enough about comics, because you've got a lot of, you know, you got a lot of different action media, I'll call it, or even dramatic media. And the bulk of it in our time is movies and television, because that's just where we are. Yep. And what we're not looking at in terms of comic books is how it has embraced inclusivity without any restriction. You know, you've got television where, you know, you're starting the inclusivity and it's getting better, right? But there's still stuff on television that is inherently racist. You've got stuff, movies the same way, but it's getting better. I'm not going to sit here and say it hasn't gotten better. It's getting better. If you look at comics and the writers that we have right now, it's just so embraced, and it's embraced naturally. These authors are from all different backgrounds, all different races, and they're all writing these characters that are just great on so many different ends. And I think that's really important. I think that not enough people are noticing that.
That's why I always tell people, follow the author, not the character. Like, you can love your character and of course, that's what comics is about. But I think it is also a big time to follow an author that you've liked, because it does help you kind of branch out and read different titles and characters and just get a better idea of the overall working comic world. But what are you reading?
Oh man, what am I always say this, but what am I not reading? Today, right? Today was a huge day for anything outside of DC.
It's been an expensive month.
Yes. Yes. Yes, it has.
What are we recording? This is on 4/26, Alien Day. Ooh. So I'm sorry to interrupt, but
no, that's
just
okay.
Kind of give people a timestamp on what's been, where we're at, because this is coming out in like a month.
That's true. Well, so today, huge day in terms of just the sheer volume. Darth Vader's Black, White, and Red started today. I'm really excited to crack that open.
I love those kind of books.
We're finally getting, as of yesterday, another Riddler Year One, which is a prequel to the movie The Batman. If you're reading that, it's very slow. It's going to be an extremely slow burn. It's really just Edward Nashton in like at work every day, and just the way he's treated and bullied, and he starts to like unravel the mystery of Gotham Renewal Fund, which we know was the big MacGuffin in the film, which is that it's all a sham, and you're watching him slowly figure that out and go slip slowly into insanity. So
I think it's also important who writes the book.
Oh, he write Paul Dano. Paul, right. Paul Dano writes the book, which just adds a whole other level. Which is great. And I'm really enjoying it. Number four, it's taking forever. This is a 6-book miniseries, and it's been out for a long time now, and we're up to 4. It seems like it come out every 2 months.
Yeah, it depends on his writing schedule, right? Especially somebody who usually doesn't write comics is in that like groove. So I've noticed that a lot too. It's like sometimes it'll take a year for a miniseries to drop, but if you're patient, it's gonna happen. So
yeah, exactly.
It's really unique. It's just a really unique situation where Paul Dano is writing that book. And I'm excited to read it once it's done, so I can read it on the app.
Yeah, it's kind of one I'm thinking of not reading and just waiting till I have all six and binge then it. Yeah, because it's very slow. Like, I want more of the story, but like, I'm tired of waiting 2 months for it.
You forget things.
Yeah, exactly. So but anyway, either way, it is a great book. It's just very slow burn. You know, my daughter, for her Strange Academy finals, number 6 dropped, and she's reading that. She's loving that, and I love hearing her talk about it. And then for Casey, who's been on our show before, Hollowed number 2 dropped today. About a serial killer who hollows out his victims. I can't wait to read that. I really enjoyed number 1, which I finally read for the first time when it came to stores. I enjoyed it thoroughly, and I wanted number 2, and here we are. I'm excited for it.
Listen up, Casuals Dark.
Yes.
Our indie spotlight for this season will be Casey Bowker and Darius Johnson's Hollowed.
Yes, they'll be on the show.
I hope to get both of them on, but at least, you know, at least our good friend Casey, who joined us last season.
That's true. And then, what's something else? Oh, my brother bought me Infinity Gauntlet. The trade.
You share that with me. That's awesome. What a great present.
It was, and it's so cool. I'm a huge, two of my favorite Avengers films are Infinity War and Endgame. And honestly, I prefer Infinity War to Endgame. Infinity War was just such a great movie.
Good. You're in a good club. And I'm there with you. We're wearing those IW jackets. You know, it's a club. It's a club to enjoy that movie much more than the second one.
Exactly.
It's much better.
I think so too. I mean, I love them both, and I love watching them together at the same time. Like, if I watch Infinity War, it's like, all right, I'm putting Endgame on, and it'll just be on the back. My kids know the scenes in the movies. That's how well they know those two movies. I'll just put them on. My son at 3 will just stare. But anyway,
you're a good dad.
Yeah, I try to be. But anyway, but reading Infinity Gauntlet and just like seeing the similarities and differences from those films is so awesome. Like, the first thing that caught me by storm was the beginning of Infinity War, when Hulk crashes into the Sanctum Sanctorum to say Thanos is coming. It was Silver Surfer that crashed into the Sanctum Sanctorum with Doctor Strange and actually said the words Thanos is coming. And I that jumped out in the page to me, because that was almost shot for shot. They just replaced Silver Surfer with the Hulk.
You just remind me of a younger self. I think I read it like 7 years ago. I think I read it around the time that movie came out, and I was just like the same thing. I was so excited because I'm a Silver Surfer fan. I'm like, I can't wait for like Fantastic Four and,
oh my God,
and Silver Surfer and that kind of cosmic level stuff, which hopefully we get to. But what a cool parallel, right? It's cool to like see the source material and then be like, yeah, they did a great job adapting this, but they did it their own way, and that actually added a lot to it, because I liked what the Russo brothers did.
Oh, for sure. I think the Russo brothers in the MCU space were amazing. I don't think they created a bad MCU film. I can't think of a single bad MCU film they were attached to.
Nope. They started off the best movie of the MCU.
Yep. So. Well, my friend, that's what I'm reading right now.
Awesome. You want to talk about the news? There's a lot of stuff going on.
Yes, let's get right into the news. I just got to pull my notes back up here.
That's good. You want me to leave this?
I'll start with the first one, and then go. Please do your thing, Chicken Wing. The Marvels, saw that trailer,
right?
It looks fun, and to have Beastie Boys in the trailer, like you're tugging at me. You're speaking my language. I was excited for this when I saw the trailer. What were your thoughts?
Oh, same. I thought it was a lot of fun, and I think that this kind of approach. It's like I almost want to call it like a Freaky Friday approach, and just getting more into taking genres and running with them within the MCU. I just almost mentioned Winter Soldier, which you don't even have to mention by name because it is the greatest MCU movie, and it is a genre movie. It's a 90s, I want to say 90s, but it's a political thriller.
Yes.
Paranoid, whatever that whole Tom Clancy world, when they started to really do that, I was getting really excited about the MCU. Now I will admit that I have some MCU fatigue. Mm-hmm. But I do watch everything, and there's things I really enjoy, and I hope they get back to basics. I don't know if it was just Phase 4 was just kind of meant to be this kind of depressing time after the snap and people dealing with all this different stuff. There's some really cool stuff that happened, but it was kind of like this weird lull after Endgame in the first 10 years. And so this trailer got me really excited because it's fun. I think that we're going to head back into that more enjoyable big screen adventure stuff.
I think so too. And I think what's going to be really important for the MCU right now, and I think Marvel's, is going to be part of this, anything in the MCU being going to be part of this, is they made us love those characters in the first 10 years. And when we got to finally see them together on screen, as the Avengers, everyone cared about that. They love these people, got these characters tattooed to themselves. These are characters that people loved so much. And it was great even seeing that outside of the comic book world, to just see that in just movies and pulling people together. And what the MCU needs to do now is rebuild a new Avengers team that we're proud of again. And I think that the groundwork is slowly being laid. Yeah. Especially setting up a lot of things. Like I want to say Kamala, adore her.
There's the whole idea that, they've been assembling the young Avengers throughout a lot of these movies and whatnots, and, through Phase 4. And so, but it's a very quiet movement, which is not the same as characters that everybody, 75% of the population could be like, I know who Captain America is. I know who Thor is, or Thor is a little, but whatever, Iron Man, a Hulk. So their approach is different this time, because like the Kang Dynasty movie, whatever happens with this Jonathan Majors thing, regardless, will happen. And they'll replace him with somebody, or he will be proved innocent. But that's what we've heard, is that they're building young Avengers up for this Kang Dynasty movie, but it's not as impactful as, like you said, the original, because more people know that. This will be more of like a sneaky punch, because it'll also be like, what is this assembling of all these kids I've seen watching the shows and the movies? And then it'll kind of click, and it'll be a lot more of a big phenomenon at that point. So they're being very sneaky.
I think so. And I think that they're slowly building these characters that people love. But like, for me, I would love to watch Kamala and Moon Knight interact. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I want to see these personalities of these different characters that interact with each other. I want to see She-Hulk with Kamala, because she's, you know what I mean? That's what I'm excited about. I'm excited about seeing these different, and I can't wait to see her interact with with Captain Marvel and Photon.
Like, I'm really excited for that kind of stuff. Now, what you're kind of talking about would be great in like Secret Wars.
Yes.
Where you have the need to cross them over.
Yes.
But until then, I don't want them to get so heavy into this. We need to have people appear, like, tell good character stories.
Yeah.
Because what's happening is like people are getting this fatigue, and if DC comes in and tells character stories, like, it'll be the right way to kind of approach and battle the whole Marvel monster that they want to. Because like I said, I want to see these movies, but I've not gone to see them in theaters. And so that's kind of my point of, is there an exhaustion, and how do you fix that? Marvel's might be it.
I mean, it might be, It might be Guardians 3.
It might be Kraven.
It might be Kraven.
Because the next bit of news is talking about the upcoming Sony movie, which will be their first rated R film. So people saw some test footage at CinemaCon, which was very bloody and very ultra violent and featured the Rhino
as
probably the main villain, which is great. Great idea. Your thoughts here about the Sony Spider-Verse, Spider-less verse, I'm not sure what to call it. And what's to come?
The Sony universe, I feel like without Disney, they don't impress me. I love the Spider-Man movies. You know, Morbius, I'm still failing to understand why they bothered. I think, and I don't think that was Jared Leto's fault.
As bad as you thought it was, or was it just the low expectations going into it?
I had low expectations going into it, and I didn't realize that those expectations could be brought even lower. And it was just because it didn't make sense. Like, and it wasn't Jared Leto's fault. It was a mixture of the writing and the why. Oh, yeah. Why? I mean, Morbius is in the rogues gallery of Spider-Man. I would like to see Morbius and Spider-Man. That's what I'm used to. I put Morbius in a Spider-Man movie. That makes sense. And you know what? I would.
Or Midnight Suns.
And thank you. Then that's another thing, too. But we discussed how there's a rumor that Agatha, House of Harkness, will be a backdoor pilot to the Midnight Suns.
So there's also a rumor that that show is a musical.
Awesome. If they pull it off, I'll love it.
Odd choice. I'm not complaining. But it would be kind of interesting to see how that sets up anything.
I'm incredibly curious.
Right.
I'm incredibly curious.
Singing Ghost Rider.
Oh, God. Oh, God. How would that even... I don't even know how that would work. Oh, but... No, I digress. Kraven, I heard that Rhino was in it. And my son loves Rhino, so I thought that was really funny because he won't ever be able to watch this for a long time. And if it's rated R and that bloody, but I'm also excited, and I like Aaron Taylor Johnson. I like him. I liked him as Quicksilver. I like him in almost anything he's in.
He's a good actor.
He is. So again, though, I come back to the same thing for Venom and Morbius. Why is this movie happening?
I don't mind the first Venom movie. The second Venom is completely trash.
Oh, and so bad.
And Carnage was one of my favorite characters. Like, both of them are one of my favorite characters. So I love Venom as a character. The movie was decent. I like Tom Hardy as an actor and stuff like that. But it's just messy without Spider-Man. It's just kind of, and when they try to like drag them in through Spider-Man No Way Home and things like that, it was kind of hopeful, but it's also just kind of like, you're just teabagging us with this idea that it's going to happen. So until Spider-Man fights Venom, like, what are we doing? So.
It's just, to me, it's such a low piece of hanging fruit that people want. And it's just like Disney, Sony, figure it out. But I don't know. That's how I feel about Kraven. But I think we both watched this trailer today.
Sure did.
Whew. Oh, man. So it's a Batman movie.
You want to get nuts?
Yeah, right. I was. Now, I. And again, you know me, and a lot of people do. If my favorite superhero wasn't Daredevil, it's Batman. They pretty much go hand in hand for me.
Are they the same thing?
Right. That's probably why they're both my favorite superheroes. But, you know, I have one on Marvel and I have one in DC. But anyway, I love Michael Keaton. Michael Keaton is.
I think you have a type, Rocco.
I might. Dark and brooding. Michael Keaton is a gift to this world. He is an absolute treasure. I finally saw the movie The Birdman.
You've just watched it recently?
Yeah, and it was
so good.
Such an amazing movie, and so many parallels to Batman. Yeah. Anyway, like, seeing that trailer today, I was like, all right, like, that is great. That is fantastic. I just wish Ezra Miller wasn't there for any of it.
That's my biggest issue. And I love The Flash. I just don't want him to play The Flash. My hope is that they knock him out of existence and they bring in Wally West, because the rumors were they wanted to kind of base things more on the animated Justice League show and that kind of stuff. So I think that's the way to go. I think there's so much negativity. Like, people are really excited for this movie. It's got really good reviews and from the early screenings and whatnot. So I want to love it, but like you said, there is that. And you know, with the impending DCU coming, this whole end of the Zack Snyder era basically ends with this movie. You have characters that, you know, played a part in that, like Batafleck and Ezra Flash and more, and Michael Shannon Zod. And actually I read something where he actually went and asked Zack Snyder for his blessing to be in the movie. Because he didn't want to insult him. Which I like Zack Snyder outside of all of this. I love his weird movie making for the most part. And I respect him. I just don't like the idea of that universe, nor the fan base. So
agreed.
That's it.
Agreed. Yeah, I agree with you 100% on that. This movie looks fantastic. I don't know what I'm going to do just because Ezra Miller's in it. Obviously, that poses a problem for me and really anyone, not just me. But I like the way they're taking elements from the Flashpoint story. I like that instead of Superman locked up and frail and away from the sun, it's Supergirl. I think that's a cool change.
Yes.
I think it makes sense. I think it's neat. And I think with the use of the multiverse, they can really play in that and they can change characters, especially when the actor turns out to be an actual insane person.
The Reverse Flash.
There you go. Exactly. But we both enjoy the Swamp Thing. What is that? Tell me about that, Chris.
So when James Gunn announced the first chapter, Gods and Monsters, of the new DCU, it was announced that Swamp Thing would be a part of it. And so, you know, we've had some renditions in media from the Wes Craven movie back in the 80s. Mm-hmm. The sequel, which is goofier and goofier. And then we also had the Swamp Thing show that was on HBO Max when it first launched.
Is it?
The DC app. It was originally on the DC app because it was comics and media, but then it moved to HBO. It should be on HBO Max.
It's not. I searched for it. It's not there.
I wonder if it's on the CW. You might want to check the CW app because I think they might have put it on there.
Okay. I'll let you watch it.
I'll let you know. Cause it's unfortunate it got canceled. It got canceled because of somebody's poor business decisions. In the state of North Carolina. Anyways, James Mangold is going to both direct and write the movie for the new DCU, which is very exciting. James Mangold, who did Logan and is doing the upcoming Indiana Jones movie. And another one of my favorite movies, 310 to Yuma. Oh my God.
Oh, dude, I went to the theater to see that when I was young.
I love Westerns.
Such a great movie.
Oh, and also The Wolverine.
Yes.
In 2013, which we actually just talked about in the last episode. So I think this is great. Logan, like we discussed in the Wolverine episode, is such a dystopian original take in a way on the old man Logan idea of that comic, but doing its own thing in this dark, gritty world. So I think that James Mangold is a great director and is able to write these scenarios as well and understands characters. So I'm really excited to see what comes out of this.
No, I agree. I really, really like Swamp Thing. And from what I heard, it's going to be more of the horror kind of aspect to it. And that is, I want to see that. And I hope that they can mix the horror with kind of the existential discussion. Because I'm reading the last run of Swamp Thing. I believe it was a 16 issue run. Doesn't matter. Anyway.
The Ram V one?
Yes.
Yeah.
when it was Kamai Levy, the new Swamp Thing.
Right. It's not
the young man from India.
Right. Yep.
There was such a discussion, such an existential discussion about like how man and earth kind of reside in one place. But I hope that we get the horror aspect with that discussion. That's kind of what I'm hoping for out of this. And if anyone can do it, I do believe Mangold can pull that off.
Yeah, sure. No, I absolutely agree. I just think that you tried a little bit of the superhero narrative, the more relationship narrative with the TV show with Abby Arcane. With Alec Holland and stuff like that. So I think that a new approach where people love horror, it's very popular right now. Mm-hmm. It's making a lot of money. So mm-hmm. like they want to do, you want to do something different. You have to push the boundaries with different genres when you're making comic book movies. That's the only way you're going to beat this Marvel machine. And that's how DC will do it. Like with this, if it's rated R and adults are like, oh my God, the Joker, $1 billion movie, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. rated R. So yeah. adults want this kind of stuff with good storytelling.
Absolutely. Well, it's the old nerds. It's the old geeks. It's us. Yeah. It's like, okay, I watch this stuff as a kid. I want to see it elevated. And then I will pay to see it. Right. Just don't insult my intelligence and give me the character. And it pays.
Yep. And do something for everybody.
Exactly. And then I think this lends into the resurgence of DC, or what I'm projecting as the resurgence of DC is that teaser for the Penguin.
Yeah.
Now we're talking about my world. I love my comics real, and I love them dirty, and I love them street level, and I like the rain. I want it to be raining, and I want it to be thunder and lightning. And when I saw, first of all, the Batman, I think the movie of 2020, and then Colin Farrell I've never had so much
transformed.
More respect. Oh my God, the man deserves all the awards, and I can't believe he didn't get one. But
probably fact of the matter is, show.
Right? But this show, this teaser, this looked great. I want some gritty stuff, and they have confirmed Robert Pattinson will make appearances in the show as the Batman. And for me, whoo, that's all I got to hear.
I think that's important. Like you want to do something new. You want to do something exciting where it's like screen to little screen. And that's the way to do it. If you're going to tell the story across these medias, which is what people really want, you have to be like, Robert Pattinson has to show up on this show.
Yeah, exactly.
Why would he not be there? I'm so excited. It looks great. I'm really ready for like a gangster show that takes place in Gotham. So that cinema level, like cinematic level that they're doing. So
awesome. No, I completely agree. And I think it goes back to what you were talking about bending genres within comic books. Is to give us a horror movie, give us this, give us that. The Batman, the amount of people that don't care about comic books that I know personally that went and saw that movie and were like, this was fantastic. My wife loved that movie, The Batman. My co-host on Critical Mass, Dan, who you know as well as I do, knows nothing about comic books.
Right.
Cried during that movie.
No, because it was so late.
Right. Yeah. No. Because he enjoyed it so much.
Yes, I agree.
And that's what I'm saying is like you take these genres and then you appeal to a much larger audience. And I think if the Batman can do it, I can't wait for them to expand on that in the Penguin.
Hell yeah. And it'll be coming to our living room. So even better, this little gap. We know the Batman 2 has gone into production. So very exciting.
Can't wait.
This next little bit of news, we have the casting for Creature Commandos.
Great cast.
There was some like rumors that Ron Perlman would be on this, but he was not, unfortunately. But Frank Grillo, who played Crossbones. And then also the, what was that crazy show where you kill one day a year? The Purge series.
Oh, The Purge, yeah.
Yeah, I like Frank Grillo. I think he's badass. So he'll be playing Rick Flag Sr., the father of Joel Kinnaman's Rick Flag Jr. from Suicide Squad, The Suicide Squad. And then we also have David Harbour, who will be doing the voice of Frankenstein. So Creature Commandos are not the original monsters. They're people who were injected with either like genetics or the powers of these monsters, and they become new versions of them. So also, let's see, we also have Viola Davis will be reappearing as Amanda Waller for somehow.
And no one else could.
Exactly. So very excited to see her in the upcoming show, Waller.
She is Amanda Waller. I look at her. It's hard to see her. And you know what? No one else could play Amanda Waller. That woman is, she's an incredible actress regardless, but her Amanda Waller scares me to death. And what I like is when I read Amanda Waller in comic books, she scares me to death. So job done.
Exactly. And it's funny, they're just going to keep the actress across the movies, which, you know, they said they were going to keep some stuff, and some stuff made sense. So.
No complaints here.
Nope. We got a couple things from the comic book world. I just wanted to kind of say, hey, the Dawn of DCU is going to have a new Blue Beetle title featuring Jaime Reyes, written by Adrian Gutierrez and Luis Guerrero, who also I believe worked on the Graduation Day miniseries. So with a new movie coming out, it makes sense that they're gonna be dropping a new series as well.
You capitalize on that.
Yeah, I mean, that trailer I think came out since we recorded last too, right? I think so.
And you know, I'm a closet George Lopez fan.
There you go.
I honestly don't tell anyone. Everyone listening, don't tell anyone. It's a secret. I really like George Lopez. I like to stand up. I liked him in the George Lopez show. I like when he speaks. I think he's freaking hysterical. And maybe people think that that's weird, but I love George Lopez. So when I saw him in this and the fact that he had the line, "Batman's a fascist," I absolutely loved that. I loved it. So,
yeah, it looks like a lot of fun. James Gunn has confirmed that it is part of the DCU. So I'm hoping that, you know, this is something that a lot of people go out to see, like families and whatnot, because it's, I think it's really important with representation. And I mean, this is a young hero, and a lot of stuff that's coming out of this is generational DC storytelling. We've seen the costumes of the, you know, last two Blue Beetles in the movie as well, or in the movie, but the classic two. And that's good storytelling that from somebody who understands how to treat DC, I think. So I'm very excited.
Awesome.
The last bit of news here is Berserker, Poetry of Madness. This is a one shot that's going to be released, because we've already talked about how issue 12 is coming out soon. I think I just ordered it.
It's
been out.
This is Keanu Reeves Berserker.
Yes. That's already out. Never mind.
Yeah.
I was thinking Dark Knights of Steel. Never mind. But yeah, this has been out. So this is a new one shot that's going to be dropping also by Keanu Reeves. And so this is going to do a sea of gore and devastation awaits as B, through a fateful chance encounter, safeguards the advance in ancient realm of Atlantis as its unstoppable protector. So a whole new chapter in the Berserker storyline.
Sweet deal. Yeah, that ended. That was a strange journey, and I'm gonna leave it at that.
Yeah, I'm about to binge it. So
yeah,
that's where I'm gonna be at.
I want to know what you think about it when you're done. But anyway,
I will. I'll let you know. I'm very excited to read it. Because I like weird stuff.
It was weird. It was freaking weird. Anyway,
so I have a little segment here. I just want to throw at us. It probably will never happen again. Maybe in a year or so, but. Or maybe half a year. Now, are you going to see it or skip it? I'm going to go over the rest of the comic movies for the year.
Okay.
And I want you to tell me if you're going to see it in the theater or not.
I like it.
All right. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3.
I will see it.
Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse.
Only if I'm with my kids, I will see it, but I won't go alone.
Okay. You should take your kids. Yeah. The Flash.
I'm not gonna see it. I'm gonna wait till it's on streaming.
Okay. Blue Beetle.
I'm probably gonna go see that. Yeah.
Take your kids.
Yeah.
That's how you start a new generation. Yeah. DC. Kraven the Hunter.
I'm gonna skip it.
Yeah. The Marvels.
I'm gonna see it. And I'm definitely taking my daughter, 100%.
Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom.
Skip it.
All right. All right.
What about you? I don't have them in front of me to like do this, but
I'll go through them. Guardians, I'm planning on seeing. Spider-Man, I'm gonna see it because mm-hmm. that like the it's just awesome animation. That it's what I think it's one of the best comic movies of all time.
I loved the first one, but I don't know. I didn't feel like I needed to see it in the theater, but I loved it. I watched it 3 times.
Right. The Flash, probably. Blue Beetle, yes. Kraven, I'll watch it at home. The Marvels, I'm not sure. I've not seen an MCU movie in the theaters since before Black Panther.
Oh, wow. Not even Endgame?
No, I saw Endgame.
Okay.
I saw Doctor Strange. Doctor Strange is the last one I saw. Doctor Strange 2.
Oh, okay. Okay, got it. I think
that was the last one.
Got it.
Aquaman, I was actually a fan of that first movie for weird reasons, and it's epic. And I think I will probably see this movie in theaters. So,
okay.
I like James Wan.
I love James Wan. Wow, I'm so mad at myself for forgetting his name. Aquaman. Oh my God.
Jason Momoa.
I love Jason Momoa. Yeah. I love Jason Momoa. I love James Wan. I mean, even Willem Dafoe, one of my favorite actors of all time, was in that movie, and I just couldn't put myself through it. I kept falling asleep.
All right.
But it's weird. That shouldn't be.
It's a neat movie. I find it to be very epic at times. So it's strangely like a good time. So I'm hoping it's even better this time around. So
I hope so too, because I'm gonna try and watch it. I'm not gonna be like fuck that movie. No. I'm gonna watch it.
You gotta give it a chance.
Well, of course, because I want it to be good. I'm rooting for it.
That's right. We have to root for these DC movies so that we can get even better ones in the theater. So
I hope so.
I think it's a good time to jump to commercial.
Yeah, I like that.
And then
idea.
We're going to come back and we're going to talk all about
Elektra Nachos. Yes.
All right, we'll be right back.
DFAT Comics is the publishing branch of DontForgetATowel.com, the only place to travel geekly. Focusing on creator-owned and independent titles like Hollowed, Pursuit of Plastic, and Fairy, and many more. DFAT Comics will be a mix of genres appealing to every kind of reader. Join the new source of comic book entertainment with DFAT Comics.
Welcome back, casuals. We are talking Elektra. This is Chris.
And this is Rocco.
And so, we mentioned the first half of the show where this has been dubbed Listen Up Casuals Dark this season. Season 3, we're talking anti-heroes, vigilantes, and more. And so we brought Elektra into this conversation because she's one of your favorite characters.
Yes.
We've done a Daredevil show, which I implore you to go and listen to. A great one. And also we talked to the Punisher this season, which a lot of this stuff is going to tie together when it comes down to it between comics and even live media. So you, my friend, have a lot more Elektra knowledge than I do. I'm trying to think about like when I learned about the character, and honestly, it might have been when those first two when that first movie came out, because I had read Daredevil Man of Fear when I was a kid. I had it. I had issues from it, but I don't really think I absorbed it as much as other comics, and so she kind of flew under my radar. And of course we'll talk about those movies, but not a really great introduction of the character, but at least be like, hey, check it out.
Absolutely. And I'm glad you said that, because I wanted to ask, you know, where'd you first hear about Elektra? And Elektra, for me, now I'm a mid-80s baby. That means I'm mostly a 90s to early 2000s kid, right? And for our group, a lot of our comic book knowledge did start in television, did start in movies. And then for those of us that wanted to pursue more, we went to the comics, we went to the source material. That's really was the process for, I would say, my age group, safely to speak. Elektra is one of those few for me that she was fully realized to me in the comic books. When I, my early readings of Daredevil, Frank Miller's Daredevil, that I was way too young to be reading, but my parents were like, it's a comic book. How bad could it be? Anyway, reading early Daredevil stuff and having Elektra in there and always knowing that she was his, like, antithesis almost. She was his
counterpart.
He loved her and she loved him, but they had very different forms of justice, where she had no issues killing, and Daredevil, that was always their, like, that was always their gotcha, that was always their argument.
Good dichotomy.
Exactly. They both had the same goal but had very different ways of getting there. And even though my first experience with her was not what was in the, I would say, I'm sorry, my first experience here was with the comics. Yeah. I've never read her first appearance, which is in Daredevil number 168, which actually came out in 1964. So obviously way before either of us were born.
That's even earlier than I would guess. Not knowing so much about the character. I'm actually kind of surprised because I did not know that.
Exactly. And what I love is that if you remember Ben Affleck's Daredevil, it was really ripped. A lot of that was ripped from this, which surprised me because that movie was so bad. She was a martial arts student of Greek descent whose father was killed, and she then started using her skills to just pretty much avenge her father in an angry fit of rage. And she grew from there as an assassin, but that's where it started, her father's murder. And obviously the movie spun that a little differently, making quote unquote Daredevil being his murderer, which actually isn't true. It's Bullseye. But regardless, I found that very interesting. I found that very interesting that the Ben Affleck Daredevil film pulled from her first appearance.
And that's why I have a really hard time hating that movie. It came out during a time of comic movies where the studios weren't sure what to do. And so you have these writers who wanted to do the right thing, but at the same time, you have poor castings and goofy situations where you think it should be like a comic book movie. But those elements were there, like you said, and I think that's a really important thing to realize.
Absolutely. And one thing I'm still asking for, MCU, Sony, somebody please, I need to see Daredevil and Spider-Man swing through the city together. Anyway,
it's gonna happen.
We need it. Anyway, moving on. So this was, I like this because this was taken out of a throwaway line in season one of Daredevil on Netflix. Daredevil, The Man Without Fear, number 3, which is in 1993, gave us two students at Columbia, one being a blind Matt Murdock and one being a Greek heiress, fall extremely hard for one another. Now, if you remember Daredevil season one on Netflix, Foggy and Matt are drunk and they're stumbling through Colombia and they're talking about how the word in Spanish is avocado for lawyer. And he's like, avocado, like the fruit, like the avocado. And they're like, we're going to be avocados. And they're talking about languages that they took. And he goes, didn't you take Greek to impress some girl, some Greek girl that you met at Columbia? What was her name again? Yep. And it stopped there. And I myself from the comics knew what he was talking about.
You're that Leonardo DiCaprio meme where he's pointing at
the
screen.
Yeah. He said the thing.
Yep. That's it.
I was exactly that. So anyway, I love knowing that 1993's The Man Without Fear number 3 was about that love story, and they just did that little throwaway line in season one of Daredevil, and on Netflix. And I thought that that was just so awesome. I thought that was so cool.
I did not know that.
Okay. I did not know.
I don't think I realized it until you just explained it now, which is the perfect thing about this show.
I love it. I love that about this show. And I love that about us. Yeah. But definitely go back, watch season one, and you'll see that scene. And I remember talking about Elektra.
Yeah, I remember it, but I don't think I put those two together. So very, very interesting that you brought that up.
Yes, yes. Thank you. Well, let's go back to the 1960s for a minute.
It's a long time ago.
It is a long time ago. We're going to go back now to Daredevil number 181, which isn't too far from number 168, which was her introduction. In 181, they already killed her. Okay. This is probably one of Frank Miller's and I actually remember this issue. Frank Miller's one of his biggest issues of Daredevil. Elektra and Bullseye pretty much have a this is it. Like the final like battle. Yeah, I know you like that. Yes, exactly. Well, I'm glad you got it. And Elektra dies, and Elektra is killed in this battle. And that definitely took me back to, you know, her death in season two. But it was Nobu, if I'm correct. And yeah, I am correct. And Daredevil actually quote unquote kills. And that's the rooftop with Punisher covering. So again, we talked about this earlier, connecting to the fact that we talked about Punisher already this season. A lot of this connects. These three are intertwined probably forever.
There's a reason why these characters are being done within the first three seasons of the show. You know, favorites and more. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
I hope they're all you out there understand where we're trying to get.
I hope you do, because that's why we do what we do.
That's right.
Well, and then we've got Daredevil 190, 1982. Okay. Elektra's dead, and the hand then resurrects her. And now she is, you know, it's like a rebirth. So she's kind of like susceptible to influence, and the hand influences her to be this killing machine, this killing tool, very reminiscent of the Punisher currently in the current run, where he is High Slayer of the Hand. And what I love about this, Chris, is that this was the story of the Netflix's The Defenders. And The Defenders had a lot of good episodes, had a lot of bad episodes. But I overall, I think I really
weren't
liked
that many.
Show.
There's only like six episodes. So how many? I'm just
no, I mean,
how many good versus bad were there, really?
I liked the episode.
It was just Iron Fist's fault.
It was Iron Fist's fault.
And Sigourney Weaver's fault for once.
Why was Sigourney Weaver there? I don't think I'm ever going to understand. But,
we'll talk about that shortly.
But you, I know. In
get
the green
back to the
room,
good stuff. What were you saying? The green room.
In the green room, you were saying something about Frank Miller and Elektra here with her rebirth.
Oh, so I have a couple questions. Like, so yes, Elektra yes. also. So first, Elektra has powers.
Yeah.
Of some sort, like manipulative powers, like she can control people, kind of some telepathy. but I guess my main point is I've heard that Marvel promised Frank Miller that they would never bring the character back.
I read this too. I read that was a promise broken. That's what I read.
Has Frank Miller ever worked with Marvel since then?
It's a great question.
I don't know if he has.
When did Batman Year One come out?
That's DC.
I know it's DC, but that means he would never worked with Marvel anymore. Yeah.
90s.
I thought it was 89?
I don't know.
Because that's what I'm asking. Because think about it. He went from Marvel.
Oh, you mean Dark Knight Returns. 80s. Like that was like 86.
Oh, okay.
That was so like mid to late 80s. Yeah. Yes. But
Batman Year One. Because wasn't that for that was Frank Miller.
That's yeah, but that's a little bit more down the line. The one that really changed and saved comics was his Dark Knight Returns.
Okay, gotcha. Which would have been after the promise was broken of Elektra We put the pieces together here. We solve it here. We put it together here.
We do. We're like goddamn archaeologists.
That's right.
Indiana Jones up in here.
That's right.
It belongs in a museum. Exactly. So beyond these broken promises,
yes,
we get more Elektra stories.
We do. So in 1996, Elektra finally gets her own run in Elektra number one. And it's well enough received. But what were you going to say?
I don't wear hats when I podcast.
Oh, you just keep hitting
the mic with my bill, my duck bill. God,
with your billed hat.
Woo.
Oh, yeah. And then we just kind of slip forward to current Elektra.
Okay.
And she has taken the mantle of Daredevil. So she is currently Lady Daredevil, which I love. I love her costume, and I have that figure. That figure's on its way to me.
So that was a three-part series. Mm-hmm. That was prior. Kraven Hunter. Right. So it was kind of it built her whole persona as Lady Daredevil.
Well,
is that how it did it? And then it went into the Daredevil run with Zdarsky?
It was before then. In the previous run of Daredevil, before the current run that we have now, Matt Murdock accidentally killed someone while he was on patrol. There was a group of guys, and he went in like he always does, and he killed someone. And what I loved about it is
I'm just joking.
Matt, there was a warrant for his arrest for murder. And his thought process was, if I am to be part of justice, then I must serve my time for what I've done. So he goes to Spider-Man. I love this so much. He went to Spider-Man first to ask for his opinion. And Spider-Man was like, I'm going to be honest with you, man. Like, you killed someone. So if I see you in the costume patrolling, I am going to take you down.
Didn't that dude kill his girlfriend?
And I am going to take you in. I mean, maybe on accident. But regardless, that's what Spider-Man tells him.
So judgy.
Then he meets with Tony Stark with Iron Man. Iron Man goes, this is occupational hazard. You don't need to go to jail. And what I loved about the run was that you got those two conversations and two issues. The first issue in that story was him going to Spider-Man and getting his perspective. And the second issue was him going to Iron Man and getting his perspective. And I think that was so perfect. So Matt ultimately decides that he is going to serve his time in prison. And when he goes to prison, he does learn a very valuable lesson, which is for another time. But what's important here, because we're talking about Elektra, is that Elektra begged him not to go to prison because Elektra said that there is so much more good that Daredevil does outside of prison than he does trying to prove some point in prison. And Matt says, Daredevil can still exist. Daredevil doesn't have to be me. Daredevil can be anyone. And Elektra offered to take on the mantle. And Daredevil said, on one condition, you can't kill anyone. And for Elektra, as we all know, that's a big problem.
What? And she loves killing?
Yes, she does. She feels it's absolutely necessary. And that's what I personally love about her and also don't like about her. But she decides to take on the cowl and decides to be Lady Daredevil. And she keeps true to her word with Matt, which is she won't kill anyone. And a lot of the conversation in those last couple issues of Daredevil for that run were the give and take of, I want to kill this person, but I'm not gonna, but I want to, but I should, but I'm not gonna, cause Matt told me not to. And then you get the 3-issue run.
Gotcha.
That you're discussing.
And then leading into the Daredevil run where all shit breaks loose.
Yes, yes. Should we talk about that now?
Yeah, a little bit. I'd like to know more a little bit. We've talked about the Punisher's role in it. I'd like to know more about Elektra's role in it, because you have to treat her as one of the main characters.
She is.
Yeah.
And she is. So Daredevil decides he's going to leave New York City forever because Matt Murdock was considered dead. So now he can leave New York City. He leaves with Elektra. they go and meet the remnants of a group called the Fist. And the Fist is supposed to be in direct combat with the Hand. Right? Because naming. Anyway. They go through some ritual where they're married. And he is King of the Fist. She is Queen of the Fist. He is King Daredevil. And she is Lady Daredevil. And
not they, Queen Daredevil?
I mean, she's Queen of the Fist, Lady Daredevil.
Interesting. That's a big title.
Yeah. So she is his top lieutenant, not only his wife that shares his bed every evening, but she is also his top lieutenant. And I love that so much. There's no one he trusts more than Elektra. And Elektra leads his forces as he is more tactical until that big dragon fight where he was like, it's time for Daredevil to do his thing. And it was beautiful. It was triumphant. But anyway, he sends Elektra on different missions because they found out that the Hand has replaced high level political folks in different countries with hand agents, we'll say.
Okay.
So what's great is there's an issue where the president of the United States is actually a Hand operative.
Okay.
So he sends Elektra to go and take care of that Hand operative. And she gets there and finds out that Iron Man is protecting the president because he got a tip that Elektra was coming. And she put Tony Stark in the ICU in his Iron Man armor. And to me, that fight was incredible. I mean, he is a fully armored individual and she is a pair of size, and she took him out.
That's a really good way to show how powerful she is, how skilled she is.
Yes. And I, oh my God, I love the costume. The Lady Daredevil costume. I love it so much.
It's really neat. I as a display piece, like picking that up, like putting that with a comic, it's a really neat design. And what they are doing on that whole run is just, it's artful.
Yes.
And it's really good. It's really badass as well.
It truly, truly is. And seeing her at Matt's side, she's so devoted to Matt and his mission, but at the same time, she is not someone to be trifled with or pushed over. Matt looks at her as an equal. She is not his wife. She is his complete and utter partner. And seeing
this important message.
Yes. And just seeing that the amount of respect that Matt gives her and the amount of respect she shows back to Matthew, to me, is incredible as they are king and queen. And I know that this is coming to an end. This run is actually coming to an end.
Yeah. This and, fall, right?
Correct. And I want to see them return to New York as husband and wife, as king and queen. And I want to see them protecting Hell's Kitchen. I want to see what they've learned and how they've grown from this globe-trotting adventure. What is very important, though, for those of you that don't know, is that because of the High Slayer that is the Punisher, they had a battle and Matt did what Matt does and beat his ass. And he told Frank, no matter what, no matter how angry you are, no matter how powerful you are, no matter what powers you have, I will always beat you. Right. That was a whole sell. And he took Frank down and Frank retreated. And it was so awesome. And Elektra was commander of the troops while this was happening. And I just want to see the two of them coming back to New York and just seeing how all those events play into their future. Are they going to stay married?
Right. What is the next writer going to do about it?
They're married. like their their husband and wife right now. Is that going to continue?
Yeah. I don't have they announced the next creative team for Daredevil.
Not that I know of offhand.
I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
It's coming. It'll be within the next couple months, I'm sure. So, unless they just let it ride. It depends on how he ends the series. So,
I agree, but this has been a great and absolutely fantastic run, and I can't wait to see what grows out of it. I really can't wait to see that.
Heck yeah. So, what do you want to do? You want to talk a little bit about the our media influences?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is around the actresses.
That's good, but yeah, that's a good approach.
I think it starts with the Daredevil film in 2003. And that was Ben Affleck as Daredevil, Matt Murdock. You've got Jon Favreau as Foggy Nelson. You've got who was Ben Urich? Joe Pantoliano. Pantoliano.
Always in those gangster movies.
Yes, he was fantastic as Ben Urich. But the big casting was Jennifer Garner as Elektra. And that the seesaw. Do you remember the seesaw scene?
I've watched the movie many times.
Why? Just why did that happen? I don't understand it.
Studio.
And this is the thing is I don't want to be rude. I like Jennifer Garner.
Yeah, sure.
I think she's great.
Yeah. I love, what was it? Alias.
Yeah. Alias is a great show. Why are you Elektra? You're not Elektra. Please don't do this.
It's a very poor casting. I don't know what really, like, we're in such a weird time for comic book movies, like I said before. They're trying to do these, you have writers who are trying to write the right thing because they're hired because they know what they're talking about. But then you have studio interference of saying, well, we have to do this. We have to do this. And it's taken what? Somewhat of 20 years to realize, like, you got to keep your hands off and let creators do what they're going to do who understand the fan base. And so we got more into that after this movie, of course, and the standalone Elektra movie. I don't know what is that even like?
I watched that movie and just was like, that movie happened to me.
That's a Hollywood movie. It's a complete Hollywood. Like, we're taking this comic book character. We're gonna do something that has nothing to do with the character's motives or origin. Or, I mean, sure, origin, but you know what I'm saying. It's just like they were trying to make money off something that they didn't understand what the power of it is.
Yeah,
I mean, if we're already at the point where we're almost on our third Elektra. That says something when there's a lot of characters who have not gotten any screen time.
Mm-hmm. No, I completely agree. I completely, completely agree. And when the Elektra movie came out in 2005, I was just like, who is the demographic here? Who are you trying to grab with this? Because it was bad casting.
Yeah.
And I feel like Jennifer Garner was probably tied into this as part of some kind of contract.
Yeah, I'm sure they wanted to do more films. Like, let's build this cinematic universe. Let's try for, like, it's so frustrating because there's movies from that era that I like, and there's movies from that era that I love, but there are, like, some really bad ones. And this is beyond bad.
This is definitely one of them. So we talk about casting with Jennifer Garner, right? And I think that there's the big reason why I really vibed with Netflix Daredevil is because of the casting. And I think one of the greatest castings was Elodie Young as Elektra. Now, she's missing the huge hair. There's one thing I remember about Elektra, the hair.
I mean, that was 80s. Come on.
Oh, my God. the curls. Awesome. It was so awesome. But
huge.
Other than that, she really embodied Elektra for me. And I could really see her as Lady Daredevil moving forward. And I think that the show did such a great job developing their relationship, starting when they were younger, to her finding the man that was responsible for his father's death and just being like, execute him. And he beat the shit out of him, but he wouldn't kill him. And I think that that ultimately being the pinnacle of where they divide and really showing that, and like the sex scene in the boxing ring, I think was, you can have a sex scene and it's just raunch, and you can have a sex scene where two people are connecting. And I think that that scene in Fogwell's gym, when he was like, this is where my dad taught me how to fight, this is where I learned, and then they fucked on the in the boxing ring late at night in an abandoned gym, I thought that that was a really awesome scene and really lent to the relationship that they have in the comics. And I think that that shown through the entire time, all the way to that scene with all the hand ninjas on the roof and their that conversation they have before they go out there, where they're just like, if we live, and we're probably going to die,
right?
but if we live, let's run away together. And they were both so ready for that. And obviously she died. She was killed during that fight. And I remember Matt, Charlie Cox, bar none, such an amazing Matt Murdock. And just the absolute despair turning into blood boiling anger on his face. That kind of slow shift as he's holding her crying. And he's kind of shifting into absolute rage to the point where he kills Nobu for shoving a sword through her chest. You know, it was incredible. And I think that that really lent to the comics more than Jennifer Garner and Ben Affleck ever could.
You know, we're at this point where, can you tell a story in 2 hours on that magnitude? Can you really tell the story of characters who have so much depth, and there's more characters involved in the story than just, oh, it's Daredevil? You can't. Like, this long form storytelling is the way. And we have benefited from watching most of these shows. There's things that suck, but I think that in terms of comic book characters that have been around for decades and decades and decades, and have all these different stories that have added to their backstory and their history, that you can't just be like, you can't make everybody happy within a 2 hour time period.
You can't.
But what you can do is make everybody happy by making an 18 episode series that has already been approved for season two. So like, I think that where we're headed is the right direction.
Absolutely. I think Daredevil should be episodic with recurring characters. And I think Disney's rebirth of this character is very important. And I think that, so Daredevil Born Again is going to be on Disney Plus in 2024. And as Chris just said, it will be an 18 episode season that's already been greenlit for a season two, which is crazy. Isn't that crazy?
It is, because they they have enough faith in the idea of what they're doing. And so I'll let you continue, but I'm really excited to see what the format of this show is, and if it is kind of like a Brave and the Bold idea where different characters come in, there's smaller arcs, it's not just one big arc. Daredevil is the centerpiece to this, but you can do so much different kind of storytelling by introducing like three episode arcs or two episode arcs, and the Punisher shows up and Tom Holland show, like, come on, like, this show is going to be one of the greatest things probably ever made.
There is so much potential for this show, because he can be an attorney by day where you're getting the law and order, you're getting the courtroom drama, which I want that. I want it to be done better than She-Hulk. I liked She-Hulk, but I think that those scenes could have been done better. I think just having Charlie Cox in that one episode where he was the attorney was wildly awesome. I mean, he got to deliver the line since the Sokovia Accords were abolished. He got to say that, and that was huge for the MCU. If you are a fan of the MCU and you heard that line, that was awesome.
I absolutely agree. I think that the way they've kind of injected him into the zeitgeist of the MCU without having to explain what happened on Netflix. If you watch Netflix show, you're better for it. But there's also a different way to use Daredevil and the characters that go with it, including Elektra. So I'll be interested to see if she even does show up on this show, honestly.
But how could she not?
But that's why I think why it's season two, where we're you do all this stuff, you do the fun comic book stuff, and all of a sudden season two, you plant these seeds, but then you can do a different telling of what you've already done, or a different perhaps this crazy punch of the hand thing. So I don't know.
They can even do the story arc with Spider-Man where Peter Parker takes a job and is framed for selling U.S. secrets to another country, and he is exonerated when he hires Matt Murdock. But at the same time, he and Spider-Man, not knowing who each other is, also take care of business on another end. So yeah, there's so much that can be done. We can even intertwine She-Hulk. We've already done that. She comes to New York. They have a weekend together. That's two episodes. That's an episode. And I'll take an episode. Right? One or two episodes. I'm into it. I'm sorry. She-Hulk as She-Hulk. That's a big turn on, but we're not going to get it right now.
I love those episodes. Those are great. Oh,
she is so good looking. Anyway. I think there's so much that can be done with Daredevil Born Again. And I think that there is so much room for Elektra, especially with a season two. But I had another thought through my research. I found that at one point Elektra was a member of the Thunderbolts.
Oh yes.
There is comic precedence to that.
There is. And I would be like, sure. If they would have already introduced her. And if they wouldn't have already started the Thunderbolts off as they have, I don't know. I'm sure we're in for some surprises there, but I don't see them bringing her in for that.
Okay. Well, I mean, I think it's wishful thinking. I mean,
yeah, absolutely. Which is fine.
It was only, according to what I know, it was only one run of the Thunderbolts where she was associated with them as one of the Thunderbolts. But with the movie coming out and Born Again coming out, maybe.
Maybe. Yeah, I mean, there's things like Frank Castle was part of Thunderbolts.
Yeah.
Luke Cage was one of the leaders of the Thunderbolts, mm-hmm. back in the day, OG stuff. So I think there's just a lot of storytelling to be told. I think I'm not really sure about the Thunderbolts movie. I think that they will stick to it being basically a Black Widow 2 with, some Hulk stuff in there.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see what, the Captain America 4 brings, but it seems like they want to kind of go into that whole Red Hulk and that side of things. So I'll be really interested to see what does come about. If John Bernthal is already back as Punisher and that's confirmed, then I could see him being in Thunderbolts as well.
I agree. And Harrison Ford as Red Hulk. That's
like everything he's ever been against, but now he's part of.
So. Yeah. Yeah.
Good job, Harrison Ford. I'm sorry, William Hurt.
R.I.P.
R.I.P.
I wish you were still with us.
Yeah.
Well, what do you think, Chris? I think we've done a lot this evening.
Yeah. Good episode. I'm actually really glad that we decided to dub the season Listen Up Casuals Dark. It gave us the opportunity to kind of do this trifecta with some of our favorite street characters from the Marvel Universe. I think getting, you know, female characters worked into our shows is great. You know, it's just something that I'd love to do more and more. I think that it's just such a big world of comics, and that there's a lot of characters who get kind of skipped over. And
yeah,
right. I want to make sure that we're doing the right thing, that we're having fun with it. And Listen Up Casuals Dark seems like the best way to do it.
I love it. I love it. I love this season so far. I hope you guys are loving it too. Remember, yeah, you can contact us on our Facebook page, Listen Up Casuals. Find us, contact us, reach out. Is there a superhero you want to know more of? Just send us a message. We're glad to do, we'll do an episode.
Heck yeah. We'll answer your questions, whatever you want. So we have some great stuff still coming up this season. We dropped a little teaser, so you can guess who we're talking about on the next show. Mm-hmm. And then also, as I mentioned, Hallowed, our indie spotlight with our friend Casey Belker.
That's right. And you did already say that we were going to talk about Constantine, and I'm excited about that. So be ready for that, listeners.
Spoiler. That's it.
Spoiler.
Let's summon some magic and talk about that sorcerer. So we just want to thank everybody for listening, and we'll have another exciting episode coming to you.
And always remember, support your local comic shop, everyone. Thank you.